Friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network USA. We take our microphones to Knock in County Mayo and to Father Richard Gibbons, who is, by the way, native of Lewisburg in County Mayo, who became curate to Knock Shrine in 2003. And first of all, Father Richard, you're very welcome.
Thank you very much, Adrian.
Huge news and very special news as Pope Francis elevates Knock Shrine to international status. First of all, congratulations. And
Thank you very much. This
in layman's language is a big deal. It definitely is. Can you just maybe give us a synopsis of the huge elevation from a national shrine to Our Lady in Ireland to an international?
Sure. Yeah. Well, a national shrine is designated by the bishops of a particular country. So in Ireland, it was the Irish Episcopal Conference, the Bishops' Conference in Ireland, would designate a shrine as a national shrine. Now, we're the only national shrine on the island, Knock Shrine. So we had that designation. So taking it to an international level can only be done by the Holy See or by the Vatican or Pope Francis himself. So our own Archbishop Michael Neary put in a request that this be done. We've been working on it for a while, and he sent in the letter requesting that it would be opportune to recognize it as an international shrine. The Vatican agreed, and the Holy Father then was asked, would he say a few words on the evening that the shrine would be elevated, which was the 19th of March, just yep. gone, the Feast of St. Joseph. And he said, absolutely. So everybody, it was really a sort of a coalition of the willing. Everybody was involved, and everybody agreed that the shrine should have this designation that only Rome can give. So on the 19th of March, the feast day of St. Joseph, this is the year of St. Joseph, Pope Francis elevated this year, or designated this year as the feast day, as the year of St. Joseph. So on that evening, he agreed to say a few words to the shrine and to the country. And during the course of his speech, he elevated the shrine to international status. Now, you might ask, well, so what? what does that mean in practical terms?
You know, if I had said that now, I would be eligible to get either Bullyfain Glouche, you know, a slap under the ear.
I'm delighted that I spared you that. So what it means in practical terms is that we really, on an international level, whenever there are, let's say, conferences or whether there's recognition by Rome and all the rest of it, Ireland and Knock in particular is there with the likes of Lourdes, Fatima, Guadalupe, Aparecida down in Brazil, all of these huge major international shrines. It's the highest, it's actually, I describe it here as like winning either the All-Ireland or the Super Bowl in terms of recognition. It's that level. Yeah, or both together, yes, why not? we've been working on this for quite a while anyway in terms of international pilgrimages. As you remember yourself, you were on the flight from New York.
Absolutely,
That we organized there a few years ago, and one from Boston, and we were already working on one before the pandemic hit from Cologne in Germany. So we've been working on this aspect for the last number of years, and Rome recognized that, and it simply means that we can, if pilgrimages are coming from abroad, the first question is, well, is the shrine recognized by the Holy See? Is it an official shrine of the Catholic Church? What's its standing amongst all the shrines of the world? And we can simply say back to them, it's of the highest recognized status.
Which is, it's great. But you might want to take us back to the 21st of August in 1879. For the benefit of those who may not know how Knock became on the international, scene in the first place.
Bring it to them. Sure. Okay, 21st of August, 1879, Thursday evening at around 8 o'clock in the evening, which was a very wet evening, which is sort of anybody that comes from this part of the world would find quite surprising. I say that with tongue firmly in cheek. Mm-hmm. But on that evening, a light was seen at the gable wall of the parish church, right around the village. Nobody knew what it was. All they could see when they peered out the door was a light at the gable wall of the church. The villagers were wondering what was going on. In fact, one man who was out in the field and he looked over, and this is part of his testimony, he thought the church was on fire. So they all gathered to see what was going on, the whole village. So when they approached, they saw a scene which took their breath away, and was a supernatural scene in terms of an apparition of Our Lady, Saint Joseph, Saint John the Evangelist, an altar, a lamb, and a cross, around which they described as creatures flying. Now, they later said that was the appearance of angels, if you like. And each one of them came independently from their own household. So it wasn't kind of sort of somebody reporting to them what was going on and then come and see, because that would lend to mass hallucination, the charge of mass hallucination. So they all came from different parts, which means that it was independently attested to. So, and of course, in 1879, no mobile phones, no instant communication. So the village just flocked to that particular wall, the gable wall of the church. The apparition lasted for 2 hours. It was an extremely complex apparition, as you can imagine, with all those figures in. Usually when you hear of apparitions of Our Lady, it's just Our Lady, like Lourdes and Fatima and elsewhere, Guadalupe and other apparitional sites. So this was quite complex. Nothing was said. There was no messages were given. The scene itself was the message. And interestingly enough, the parish priest of the village at that time, a very holy man called Archdeacon Kavanagh, didn't go and see, even though his housekeeper did report that there were unusual goings on at the parish church. Now, he regretted it for the rest of his life, he said in his own testimony afterwards. But he didn't go. We can come to that later on. But the apparition lasted for 2 hours and then just simply disappeared. Immediately after that, a commission of inquiry was set up just to see what was happening by the church, because the church doesn't, you don't just take the first testimony that comes along and saying, I saw Our Lady. You need a full investigation into this, because it could be a whole host of different things. So an official commission was set up in October of 1879, and 15 witnesses came forward. Now, more than 15 people saw the apparition, but why only 15? Well, at that time in 1879, a land war was, people were in the middle of a land war. They were looking for rights to their land. There was revolt and rebellion against the British government of the day, and also there were a lot of secret organizations. So people, they were afraid to come forward to give testimony on anything. It's the old adage, whatever you say, say nothing, came into vogue. But they managed, 15 people came forward, ranging in age from 6 years of age to 75, right across the spectrum. And their testimony was found to be trustworthy and satisfactory, which was the term used at the end of the... Now, notice how that's very cleverly signaled. Trustworthy and satisfactory. The commission didn't come out and say, yes, this actually happened. So the testimony was trustworthy and satisfactory, meaning to say that these were good, honest people that were going about their ordinary, everyday lives, and then this happens. And what they have seen, what they're reporting, is simply what they saw. And very shortly after that, then, pilgrims started to come to Knock. Within a year, actually, Adrian, which is which was very significant. We had two archbishops came to Knock on pilgrimage, specifically to Knock, one from Tasmania and the other from Canada. Tasmania, it's 16,000 miles away in 1880.
Wow.
But he came, he was of Irish descent. Both archbishops were of Irish descent. And they heard about this and they thought it was, one, actually, the archbishop of Tasmania was cured by a relic from the Gabriel Wall that was sent out to him and cured of blindness, actually. And and he came forward. And he made his way all the way from Tasmania to Ireland in Thanksgiving. So you had a lot of testimony immediately after the apparition in terms of healings, which are all recorded in our museum and our record department here, so in our archives. So that is basically what happened. The people went back to their ordinary lives. None of them became priests or nuns or anything else other than part of a village that saw this extraordinary thing. There were also charges later on that the whole thing was a hoax, of course. One particular theory called the lantern theory, which said that somebody projected an image onto the old church. But scientists from Maynooth College came down to actually practically put that into an experiment. And they saw that even today, you'd find it very hard to do something like that. Never mind in 1880.
Right.
So they tried to do it, but it didn't work. And you could see the beam of light going back to this point of origin. On that night, like these were ordinary people, I say again. Ordinary, they were intelligent people. They mightn't have been very well educated. That didn't mean that they weren't intelligent. They were clever, ordinary, everyday people, salt to the earth. And they would definitely, if it was a hoax, they would not have maintained the same story right throughout. Finally, just to bring this, a second commission of inquiry was set up in 1936, which re-examined three of the surviving witnesses out of the 15 that were still alive. And one woman, she died within a couple of weeks of giving her last testimony. She said, I know what I saw. I'm giving my testimony knowing that I'm going to my God. Meaning, look at, if I wanted to clear my conscience now, and if this was a hoax, I'd do it now. But I know what I saw. All I can say is what I saw. And I know that it's in good faith. So that's it in a nutshell.
Now, my guest friends, Father Richard Gibbons, parish priest of Knock, rector of Knock Shrine. Just again, so that people get an idea of what Knock might have looked like in 1879. If we go back to that, God knows.
Mm-hmm.
At Emass, my home parish, and indeed Lewisburg, not far behind, has been referred to tongue-in-cheek as the back of beyond. Why? And it would be questionable to know that if this was going to happen, why would it be in such an out-of-the-way place? In 1879, there'd hardly be, roads of any quality going to Knock.
That's right. That's right. It was in the backs of the beyond. It was in the middle of the county, in the middle of the province, in the middle of nowhere. A small little insignificant village, unlike thousands upon thousands of other villages throughout the country at that particular time. Not wealthy by any means, but people were self-sufficient in terms of what they were able to grow and produce for themselves. And it's interesting, at that time, in 1879, the great famine of the 1840s, the late 1840s. Well, there were many famines in 1879. There were many famines in the west of Ireland, just as pronounced as the one in the 1840s, believe it or not, in pockets of the country. So Knock itself simply had the parish church, which was built in 1828, a year before Catholic emancipation in 1829. So a parish church and simply thatched cottages dotted right around. That's all that was here. No trees, very, very unspectacular country.
Kind of bogland.
Like on the coast where...
Yeah.
bog land and not great land, and but people eked out a living. In fact, it is interesting, just a couple of years ago, we constructed an exact replica of what the village was like in model form. It's in our museum, and it's a fascinating piece. You can see it actually on our website and all that. Just exactly what the village was like. So in the middle of nowhere, like many, many other places. And I suppose it's unusual. It echoes really the Magnificat, where the Lord, that great hymn of Mary's, he has brought down the lowly to he's brought down the great to show the lowly, to exalt the lowly. Like if you take Fatima, middle of nowhere. Fatima was in the middle of nowhere in at the time of the apparition there. Lourdes, in the middle of nowhere. Guadalupe, in the middle of nowhere. Aparecida, in the middle of nowhere. There's a particular theme going on about that. So it's kind of the way God works. He works to confound those that think that they know everything in the lives of ordinary people, because that's how he works best. He works best in the ordinary people doing extraordinary things in a life of faith. So that theme is Nazareth, Adrian. Yes. Nazareth, where is it? In the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
When he grew up. Even there's a line in scripture, what good can come from Nazareth? So there's a particular theme going through there.
I am for the New York connection, I know that there was the last surviving witness to knock apparition was John Curry. And in 2017, he only died a few years back. And we know that, he was a quiet, reserved witness, but somebody who, the witness you were describing there, went to his death with a very clear picture of it. I want to, I know that you're, under the gun there in terms of time, but I would like to give a couple of minutes to the basilica at Knock and the significance of a basilica.
Sure. The basilica at Knock here was designated, it was a church built by James Horne, the great former parish priest, the builder of Knock, in 1976. And James was looking towards 1979, the 100th anniversary. So he needed, Knock didn't have any place to hold the thousands upon thousands of people that were coming for masses. Everything was outdoor, and you can imagine the weather, even at the best of times. Sure. So he decided to build a huge church that would seat people and hold people under cover to a capacity of about 10,000 people. So he built that in 1976. In 1979, Pope St. John Paul II visited, and he elevated the church, as it was called, to basilica status. Now, it's a huge basilica, and we renovated it in 2016, actually on its 40th anniversary. So we renovated the basilica top to bottom, inside and out. You saw that when you visited with the pilgrims, Adrian. It is state of the art now in terms of its functioning, because it needs to, Knock always needs to adapt to the needs of modern pilgrims. So it's a wonderful building. It's iconic really in its architecture, and it's instantly recognizable by anyone that knows Knock itself.
You know, going back to the what turned out to be just a rickety road in my day going to Knock. 1.5 million pilgrims go to Knock every year. It is astounding, for a country, the size of Ireland, and also that, each diocese have an annual, pilgrimage to Knock. Now, again, just give us a wrap-up of the international status and what that will mean now in terms of, its compared to Fatima, compared to Lourdes?
Sure. Well, what it'll mean in practical terms, even for your own listeners there, is that instead of one plane coming over from New York in 2015, I think it was, there'll be now two, three or four planes coming over from New York in the years to come, Adrian. And so we'll be utilizing that standing for all our friends, whether they are in New York or Boston or Philadelphia or wherever else, that we have the facilities, we certainly know how to welcome people, and that we hope that when hopefully things get back to normal in terms of travel, which might take a little while yet, but if we work towards that we will see people visit Knock, come to Knock, know what it's about, because even going online during the pandemic, our online presence in terms of masses and ceremonies and all of that has really gone through the roof. Like, we've had people that hadn't a clue about Knock, didn't know anything about Knock, right, didn't know where it was, barely even knew where Ireland was, never mind where Knock was, from right around the globe. We get messages from Ho Chi Minh City in Vietnam to Anchorage in Canada to Melbourne, Australia, all over the place. It's extraordinary. And what they say to us is, well, if we come, we've been with them, we've kind of ministered to each other online over the year, and what they said is, if and when we're able to get to Ireland, we're definitely coming to Knock. So that's really our appeal. It's a place really of calmness, of spirituality, of helping those that are broken and in need of healing. And that's really the gift of Knock to people's lives in faith.
Father Gibbons, before you get back to your busy schedule there, I want to ask you about the website. Where can those of us who have a deep interest in Knock and the history of Knock, what's the website?
Sure. Very simply, www.knockshrine.ie. www.knockshrine.ie. You'll get everything on our website. History, services, ceremonies, retreats, the whole lot. Everything is there. All the information you need about Knock is there.
Thank you for your time. Congratulations again on Pope Francis, with a video message elevating Knock Shrine to international status. Father Richard Gibbons, Francis.
Thank you, Adrian. Thank you very much indeed.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. God bless you.